Sean Burgoyne is an AFL legend, winner of 4 premierships, 1 with Port Adelaide and 3 with Hawthorn. Sean also holds the record for the most AFL games played by an Indigenous player. He's from a family with a rich footballing history too. His older brother also played for Port Adelaide, as did his dad, who started his playing career at the oldest Indigenous football club in Australia, the Caniba Roosters in South Australia. Sean was an inaugural member of the AFL Players Association Indigenous Advisory Board, and he's now a director of ACS Indigenous Property Services, a cleaning business that helps young Indigenous people find employment. He's just published an autobiography with the title of his football nickname, Silk, Football Family Respect. It's co-written by Martin Blake, and it's a very great pleasure to welcome to the year that made me, Sean Burgoyne.
Thanks for having me. It's a big relief that the book's finally out.
I bet it is. Yeah, different type of pressure from playing AFL games, but still a big one. Well done. Let's go right back to the start, Sean. Can you tell us about your mum and dad and where you come from?
I was originally born in Darwin. Yeah, my people are the Waro people and the Kukuta people. So my mother's from just south of Darwin, and my dad's people on the far west coast of South Australia. Then we moved, obviously, down in the south to Port Lincoln, and within Port Lincoln there's a small Aboriginal community, and just grew up like most kids, you know, around family and friends and camping and fishing and obviously playing footy for the Mallee Park Footy Club.
Like most kids in some senses, but not all kids grow up in a family where there's so much illustrious footy achievement already on the record. Was that a bit of a pressure for you as a young man growing up?
Nah, to be honest, I didn't feel any pressure at all when I was a kid playing footy growing up. Football has always been just about having fun and enjoying it and loving the game. And I was able to do that with my brothers, my cousins, my friends. You know, we had a football wherever we went. Didn't matter where it was, there was a football in our hand. And that's the way it always was, enjoying the game. And I think that's what definitely has helped me stay around for 21 years in the AFL system is I've always had that love for the game. And if I lost the passion or any one of those things, I probably would have given up a long time ago. But yeah, it's helped me through my entire career.
Absolutely. We mentioned that your dad started his playing career at the oldest Indigenous football club in the country. Could you tell us a little bit about the Roosters?
Yeah, so the Caniba Footy Club's in Ceduna, which is on the far west coast of South Australia. And yeah, they're the oldest Indigenous footy club in Australia. And my dad was born out there on the reserve, and my dad played a lot of footy with all of his brothers and friends and family as well. So they normally just travelled around playing footy here and there, and dad built up a reputation as a good country footballer, and I think we just followed in those steps, to be honest.
Your career is the stuff of the dreams of many a young footy player. But I gather that your first dream wasn't actually to become a football player, but a park ranger. What went wrong, Sean?
Yeah, well, I'm not too sure. But I don't know. I always grew up camping and fishing and hunting, and footy was something that wasn't really thought of until a bit later on in my early teens as a career. But before that, it was always about camping. We used to go to a place called Sheringa, and, you know, we used to go up behind Ceduna and on the Nullarbor and hunt and I just wanted to be outdoors, and you know, I think we must have had a careers day or something at school, and the park ranger must have come out, and it was like, oh, that seems like the perfect job, is to be out and about looking after the country and not really being fixed to a desk. So that was probably my first real aspiration to have a job, to be honest. But yeah, I put that to the side once I hit, you know, my teenage years for footy.
Oh, never too young to start, Sean, but obviously you went a very different path and in just a legendary way, but it wasn't an easy path. Can you tell us about the racism that you experienced, particularly in your early days growing up and at the start of your career?
Yeah, obviously, growing up being Indigenous in a small town, there was some incidences of some racism here and there, and yeah, it was something that we had to get used to because it wasn't going away. And obviously, when it first happens, it takes you back a bit, and you try to figure out why those things are happening, and you speak to your mum and dad, and they were able to talk some sense to us. But yeah, I was just going through what, you know, majority of my cousins went through at the same time, to be honest.
What was your parents' advice?
Well, when we first started, probably there was a few fights here and there at school and, you know, on the streets, you know, retaliating and those type of things. So mum and dad were always, you know, talking about us about, you know, violence never solves anything, and try not to worry about it too much, try to become stronger from it, and just those conversations. But when you're a young kid, it's pretty hard to have a mature conversation. Yeah. And it definitely took a while. But, yeah, I touched on those incidents in my book. And, yeah, it's obviously something that we've got to continue to try and achieve some social change. And as I've gotten older, I've become more vocal, and because I've just become probably more confident, to be honest. Yeah, and I think using AFL over the past few years as a good vehicle to help try to create social change has been something that a lot of players are lucky and privileged to try and do.
On The Year That Made Me, we're speaking with Sean Burgoyne, AFL legend and now author of the autobiography Silk, Football, Family, Respect. Sean, Port Adelaide as a club has a lot of destiny associated with it for you. Your dad, your brother played as well. But it was also part of the connection of the romantic love of your life. How did you meet Amy?
Yeah, we, in all honesty, just met at a footy game, her brother and...
Who would have thought?
My brother and... I know, it's pretty funny. My little brother and her little sister played in the same footy team, and her father's family are from over Port Lincoln way as well. So they have a long history of, you know, knowing each other, and it just fell in place, to be honest, and went to school together. And, yeah, her father's obviously a Port Adelaide Magpies great as well, Greg Phillips, and she's got football in her blood as well. So it was quite funny, to be honest, how everything works out.
Absolutely. Now, many AFL players will go through a whole career and you won't be able to ask a question about playing in a grand final, let alone winning one, let alone winning four. tell us about your first premiership and what that meant to you and Port Adelaide, Sean.
Yeah, that was an unbelievable feeling. You know, we at Port Adelaide, I think we finished, you know, 2001, 2 and 3, either first or second, somewhere on the ladder, and weren't even able to get into a grand final. So 2004, there was a lot of pressure on us heading into that final series, and we were able to get over St Kilda and then head into the grand final, and then to obviously have the victory over Brisbane Lions, who were going for 4 grand final wins in a row, was amazing. And to be part of Port Adelaide's history and their first flag in the AFL was, yeah, something that I hold very close to my heart. And definitely there was a big sense of relief and satisfaction once we'd won that flag, because there was, like I said, there was a lot of pressure on everyone at that time at Port Adelaide.
You mentioned earlier that, you know, you've been very active on the Indigenous Advisory Board and more vocal on those issues. Can you tell us about the scene as you saw it back in 2011 when you became an inaugural member of the Indigenous Advisory Board?
Well, at the AFL, we've been lucky to have an Indigenous players camp every 2 to 3 years. And on the back of one of those camps, the players thought it'd be a good idea to form some kind of representation to represent the Indigenous players, because there's 11% of the list are made up of Indigenous players. And when you consider Indigenous people only make up roughly 2% of the population, so that means we're going pretty well in the AFL with numbers, but we wanted a better representation. And Adam Goods was our first chair of that. And, yeah, there's some really good conversations, and now players are getting a bit more representation on what affects them. And I don't know, I think it's about 6 or 7 of us are part of that board. And, yeah, I've been on it ever since.
Mm. We've talked about your first premiership. There were 3 more to come at 2013, 14 and 15. But you mentioned Adam Goods also. And 2013 was obviously, you know, a terrible year for Adam and I think football generally in terms of the way Adam Goods was treated. And you've written about that in your book. Could you tell us how you thought of what was happening back then and now your reflections on it from today?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, Adam's a great bloke, and he's a legend of the game, a legend of the Swans. He's done so much for Indigenous people and players across Australia. And when you have someone who's held in such high regard like that get treated the way they do, you know, it catches you off guard at the start, and then it's there was a bit of anger and a bit of angst from the playing group, the Indigenous players, to see someone who's so loved be treated with such disrespect. And we wish we probably had stood up beside Adam a lot quicker. As an industry, that it obviously failed to protect Adam, and which I think when you're a legend of the game, you just want all your legends, no matter who they are, where they come from, to be treated with respect. And over a number of years, you know, Adam's final years, he wasn't treated that way. And I touch on that in the book and how it affected me and other Indigenous players. And I think on the back of that, you see more Indigenous players now say enough's enough, and they're standing up to racism. They're calling it out more often, and it's good to see. But it's on the back of probably Adam going through a really tough time.
Yeah. 2015 was the year of your 4th premiership, the 3rd in a row with Hawthorn, and that's the year Sean Burgoyne, that you've chosen as the year that made you. But it was not just a year of a premiership and the joy that goes with taking out the big prize, was it?
No, there was a lot of things going on. Mm. We just welcomed our fourth baby into the world, little Nixie. And, yeah, we're on the cusp of doing something that's very rarely done in the AFL scene, yeah. is go for three grand final victories in a row. So we had the birth of Nixie, that final series. I think we went to West Coast in the first week of the finals, and they gave us a fair touch-up and a smashing over in Perth. We came back and played Adelaide, and we won. And then my wife went in for labour after the game, the next morning, and she gave birth to Nixie. And she was in hospital for 2 or 3 days, and picked her up, took her home. She was home with the other three children and my mother-in-law looking after her. And then I drove straight to the airport to fly out to play Fremantle. Flew over there, and we beat Fremantle in the prelim final, flew back, and then spent the week with the family preparing for a grand final. And my missus, I think she went to Build-A-Bear as well, to buy a Hawthorn Build-A-Bear, and she got the shorts off the little teddy to give Nixie some little shorts. So Nixie was at a hospital for a bit over a week, and she came to her first grand final sitting on Amy's lap watching the game asleep. Yeah, we're obviously able to beat West Coast, and I think Daryl Braithwaite at the grand final celebrations got up on stage and sang, and Nixie was there as well. We had the baby capsule. She was under the table, sound asleep, while we were having a grand final celebrations, eating dinner at the Crown.
Wow, yeah. And then off the field as well, there were other really tragic events that you were close to, including the death of Adelaide coach Phil Walsh, and you write about that in the book as well. You know, it was a tragic situation. He was stabbed to death by his son, who was later found not guilty of murder on the grounds of mental incompetence. What sort of impact did that tragedy have on you?
Well, Phil, first and foremost, was my assistant coach at Port Adelaide for a number of years, and he put a lot of time and effort into me, and I'm very thankful for the time and effort that he put into my life early on to help set me up as a player. And, yeah, obviously, like everyone, we're all caught off guard and with the tragic circumstances surrounding his death. And definitely the players who Phil's touched and come across over the years were probably thankful for his guidance in our footy careers, because he was a very smart man, and it was something that was quite tragic.
Yeah, and in 2015 as well, your teammate Jared Roughead was diagnosed with melanoma. What impact did that have on the team and you?
Yeah, well, when I first came over from Port Adelaide to Hawthorn, Ruffy opened his house up to me, and I lived with him for the first 3 to 4 months of my career at Hawthorn. And my wife stayed in Adelaide at the time with my two young boys to get the house ready and prepare for our move. And I was over there living with Ruffy, preparing to go through pre-season. So I got on well with Ruffy really well. He was showed me everything, all the little back streets to get in and out of Melbourne, where to park, you know, how to get the training, watch the traffic. So he gave me the knowledge I needed to when I first came over to Hawthorn, and our friendship grew from there. And yeah, he's obviously went through two really tough battles, because he defeated it, his cancer the first time, and then it came back, and it was just probably more emotional for your friends, because you want to help your mate and you want to, you know, do the best you can, but he's on a really tough battle, and thank our lucky stars that he was able to defeat that, and now he's living a happy life, and he's, you know, he's got married with children, and I'm so happy that he come through positively. But yeah, it was a rough ride there for a few months, but yeah, I'm just glad he's through it now and got a healthy life.
So looking back on 2015, was there a temptation after now winning 4 flags, birth of a new child, was there a temptation to go out on a high and to hang up your boots in 2015?
Nah, not at that stage. I was very much enjoying footy at that stage, and I wanted to try to play as long as I could, to be honest. That's what I've always said. I would play until my body breaks. So I gave it a good crack. 21 years in the system.
Yeah,
so I still had a few more years left in me, and my children were loving footy at that stage as well. So they'd been to, I think, the last 3 or 4 grand finals in a row. And, all things were sailing along pretty smoothly.
Mm. How did you feel playing your 407th and final AFL game?
It was a surreal moment, to be honest. My 400th game was against Port Adelaide, which was a fairy tale, and we lost that game. But then heading in to my last game, it was a bit of another surreal moment. There was no crowd. We're playing against Richmond. My family were home watching TV. We drew the game, which was a weird way to end your career with a draw.
draw with no crowd. That's not exactly how you'd imagine it, is it?
Yeah, I know. And Clarko's last game at Hawthorn and my last game, my 250th game. So it was a weird way to go out, but, you know, the time was right.
Did it feel 40. Good, though, like having made the call?
Yeah, it did. A lot of pressure had come off. My body, you know, I'm getting older. I'm turning 40 next year. So I've got a plan for something for life outside of footy. But, yeah, it felt good to actually finally call time and plan for the next stage of my life.
And how are you finding retirement in its early days, and what are your future plans?
Yeah, I'm enjoying retirement, to be honest, at the moment. I woke up and I've gone for a few runs here and there, and then I woke up a couple of days and it's been raining and I'm like, nah, I'm going back to bed. So,
yeah, not a luxury you've had for decades, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly right. And life after footy, I've accepted a role at the Port Adelaide Footy Club to work in the footy department across a number of different areas, you know, list management, government, corporate relations, leadership, mentoring, and being an Indigenous liaison officer for the players as well. So I've got that as an employment option, and I've also started my own Indigenous cleaning business, ACS Indigenous Property Services, which is a cleaning business aimed at giving Indigenous people employment opportunities, and that's based out of Melbourne, but will be national as well. So I want to be able to continue to help improve Indigenous lives, and I think I can do that through employment.
Well, it's been great speaking with you, Sean Burgoyne. Congratulations on a wonderful career and on knocking off the autobiography as well. Silk, football, family, respect. We always finish the year that made me with a bit of music. What piece of music shall we go out with today?
Well, my favourite band of all time is something a bit older. It's called The Eagles.
I've heard of The Eagles, yes.
And my all-time favourite song is Hotel California. I listen to it all the time. I think I know every word, but that's my favourite song of all time. And I listen to it probably, you know, once every 2 days, to be honest, when I'm just driving in the car, I put it on. So,
again, Sean Burgoyne, thank you so much for joining us.
No worries. Thank you for having me, and you really enjoyed it.
She lit up again.